Washington. I want to welcome everyone. Turn this off. Would like to welcome everyone to the sixth event sponsored by the Robin Nyman Mikvah Education Fund. My name is Lori Cohen, and I am a member of the Robin Nyman Mikvah Education Fund Programming Committee. I would like to extend a special welcome to community Rebbetzins who are joining us this evening. Thanks to Zoom, we have people who may be joining us from outside our area. One of our goals is to create Akdus in our community around our mikvah. If you are in the greater Washington, D.C. area, we would love for you to identify yourself as a local by clapping, by clicking on the reaction icon at the bottom of your screen and clicking on the clapping hands. Or feel free to raise your hand and wave if you have your camera on. And for our local audience, here is a heads up that you will soon be receiving an email invitation to our annual fundraising event in support of the Mikvah Emunah Society. You can place an ad in our online journal to show support for the work of the Mikvah Emunah Society, and we hope to come together at an in-person event in the spring. As we emphasize each year, user fees alone do not cover the cost of our operations. We depend on you to ensure that the mikveh remains an integral part of the Jewish life and of our local Jewish community. Your contributions ensure that we have funds to keep a safe environment for women to feel secure, maintain our state-of-the-art facilities and equipment, provide a clean and welcoming environment for all. We're putting a link to the in the chat to www.mikvehemunah.com, and you can click there to make your contribution. As a reminder, this program is for women only. For those who did not know her, Robin Nyman Olivashan was the manager of the Wallerstein Mikvah here in Silver Spring before her Patira 2 years ago. She was a well-known mikvah educator and a dynamic teacher and social worker who transformed the experience for women going to the mikvah in many parts of the country. Robin was beloved by all of us who knew her, not only for her dedication to mikvah and taharas hamishpacha, but also for her warmth and compassion and terrific sense of humor. With the blessing of the Nyman family, the Mikvah Emunah Society established the Robin Nyman Mikvah Education Fund to honor Robin's memory and perpetuate her legacy. We hope that our efforts pay tribute to the tremendous contributions that she made to our community, especially to the practice of Taharas HaMishpacha. This fund is dedicated to training mikvah attendants and greeters in our community and beyond, providing Taharas HaMishpacha and related educational programming, such as this one tonight, and sponsoring challah classes for brides in the greater Washington community who are unable to pay. A Robin Nyman Mikvah Education Fund Programming Committee, made up of women from most of the shuls in our area, has been planning online events. If you missed any of our past events, recordings of most of the events are available on our website, and we will be posting a recording of tonight's presentation there as well. And now for our program. As some of you may recall, the very first Robin Nyman Mikvah Education Fund event that was held last October was a talk on the challenges that some women experience going to mikvah. We've heard from many of you that going to the mikvah can be stressful, and all the more so since March 2020 when we have had to deal with COVID. If you've made an appointment to use the mikvah here in Kent Mill during the height of COVID before vaccines, you are likely to come in contact with our speaker tonight. We are blessed to have her in our community, a fabulous mikveh educator, the manager of the Wallerstein Mikveh, Chayi Chin. Chayi's presentation tonight, De-Stress the Dip, Debunking Common Misconceptions About Mikveh Preparation, draws on Chayi's experience as a mikveh attendant and challah teacher. Over the years, she has encountered many women who have made their mikveh preparations more complicated and stressful than necessary. It is our hope that you learn something tonight that will help make your life easier. Please note that while Chayi will be addressing halakhic matters, we encourage you to consult your own Rav on these topics. We are also excited to announce that there will be more opportunities to learn about Taharas HaMishpacha starting later this month. The Robin Nyman Mikvah Education Fund will be offering Chayi's comprehensive 6-session refresher course. This course is only for women in the greater Washington, D.C. area. We will be publicizing the details locally. In December and January, also just for locals, Kent Mill Synagogue Yoetzet Halacha Bracha Rutner will be offering her 2-part high-level refresher course. And just a few housekeeping items before we get started. We've placed all participants on mute, and we ask yourselves to keep yourself muted throughout the presentation. If you have a question that you'd like discussed at the end, please send it to Mikvah Q&A, send Qs here. You will see an option to send your question to Mikvah Amunah Society, but please only chat to Mikvah Q&A. Once Chayi finishes her presentation, I will be asking her the questions. All questions will be anonymous, and we will not identify you by name unless you ask us to. Chayi, we look forward to your presentation.
Thank you, Lori. I appreciate that. Hi, everyone, and welcome. I'm really, really thrilled to see everyone here, and I hope that you all enjoy this presentation tonight. I would very much appreciate if you all put your cameras on, if possible. It's just a little challenging to look at a bunch of black boxes, and I would love to see everyone's faces. A couple of housekeeping items and a disclaimer. So like Lori said, hold on to your questions until the end of the session. Hopefully I'll have covered all or most of your questions during my presentation. And if not, you can ask questions at the end. My local POSIC looked at and approved my notes. I'm going to be covering the basic halachos as I learned them and as I was trained to teach them, but I'm not a POSIC, obviously. So as always, consult with your own Rav if you have a question or if what I tell you differs from what you learned from your Kala teacher or what your own Rav tells you. Okay, a couple of important things to understand before we get into the actual misconceptions about preparation. Why is tonight's topic so important? As the mikveh director of the Wallerstein Mikveh in Silver Spring and a Kala teacher, I hear from lots of women on a regular basis that mikveh preparation is super stressful. And I'm going to be honest here, I used to stress about this as well many years ago. Some women have told me that they already start stressing about the prep from the day they get their period. Think about it. If that's the case, it means some women spend somewhere between 12 and 14 days stressing about a process that should take approximately an hour. A woman recently told me she's on long-term birth control, the kind where she can go a year or 18 months without getting a period and becoming a nida, just so she can avoid going to the mikvah. That really tells us a lot. Derecheha derchei Noam, the Torah's ways are pleasant. So if you're stressing about mikvah preparation, chances are you're overdoing it. And that's why we're having this presentation tonight. Chafifa is a word we're going to be using. It's the Hebrew word for preparation that has to be done before tevila. Literally, the word chafifa means washing. Now, just to give you something to think about, some perspective on mikveh preparation. In 1925, only half of all the homes in the U.S. had electric power. So think about how women, as recently as the early 1900s, prepared for going to the mikveh. Probably sitting in an oversized metal bucket and pouring water on themselves by candlelight. Women had real dirt on them, like dry mud, etc. Yet, we have no doubt that these women and women since the times of Sarah Imenu were preparing in a way that was 100% halachically okay. Now, these days, we're generally very clean. On any given day, you're probably 50 times cleaner than women 100 years ago right after their weekly bath, even if you haven't showered in 4 days, which I don't recommend. We also have indoor plumbing and we're able to bathe with ease, ensuring that we're clean and that we're chatzitza free. I'm going to define the word chatzitza in a minute, so don't worry. So there's nothing really at all that we're going to cover in preparation that you haven't been doing since you started bathing or that you don't do at some point of the day, the week, or the month. The only difference is that before tevilah, you're doing these things within a time frame as close to tevilah as possible. Now, I know that this presentation is about mikvah preparation and not about the beauty of the mitzvah of tevilah, immersion in a mikvah, but I would be remiss if I didn't mention just one beautiful thought. And hopefully this beautiful thought can help you. As we know, mikvah is not about physically cleaning ourselves. A bath could accomplish that. It's about transforming ourselves spiritually. Just like a convert has to immerse in water in order to change his or her identity from a non-Jew to a Jew, women's immersion in the mikvah transforms them spiritually. When a fetus comes out of a womb and becomes a human being, a baby, that's a physical transformation involving water as well. So we understand that water has the power of transformation both physically and spiritually, which is something that we as women can take advantage of. The Sefer HaChinuch tells us that when we tevil, we should see ourselves as just having been created in that moment. The moment that we're going into the water is like we were created right then. So this is a monthly opportunity to be like newborns with a clean slate. You literally have a mini Yom Kippur each time you go to the mikvah. So try if you can to connect to this process of renewal next time you go to the mikvah. Okay, there's the end of the beautiful thought. Now, here are some basic principles of chatzitza that we have to understand in order to understand the misconceptions. The definite rach after shkia. The reason being that a woman may do her preparations too quickly if it's already nightfall and she knows it's already halachically allowable for her to tevil. So that's where the 1 hour time frame comes from to ensure that she's not rushing and she's doing chafifa properly. Order of preparation. Misconception. I have to do my chafifa in a certain order. And if I do it out of order, I have to start all over again from the beginning. Fact. It makes zero difference halachically in what order you wash yourself. Remember, the objective is to wash yourself and remove any chatzitzos. That's all. The reason you may have learned the steps in the head to toe order was because this way your teacher knew that she was covering everything with you and not skipping any part of the process. So it was simply practical for her to go in order from head to toe. Number 7, fingernails and toenails. Misconception. I have to cut my nails all the way down so that there's no white part of my nail left and I have to remove every little piece of skin around my nails. Fact. You have to remove any dirt under your nails, remove nail polish, and cut your nails. There are different opinions about how long your nails may be, but the bottom line is that you have to cut or file some of your nail. Your nails don't need to be super short, and you are certainly allowed to leave white on your nails. If you start bleeding when you're cutting your nails, that really means you're cutting them way too short. And if you have fungus on your toenails or an ingrown toenail, do your best and move on. We're not expected to try to get rid of something that's impossible to get rid of. Little pieces of skin around your nails, the kind that you pull off and there are many more of them all the time or they keep popping up, are not a chatzitza. Suggestion, by the way, if you like manicures and pedicures and you can afford it, it's always nice to go to the nail salon the day you're going to the mikvah or the day before and get a manicure and pedicure, and this way it's done. And many salons will allow you to come back the next day for nail polish without charging you an extra fee. Number 8, combing hair. This one is one of the biggest misconceptions and for many women, the most stressful part of the prep. So here we go, misconception. I have to comb my hair, then remove the hair from the comb, then comb again, and then check the comb again to see if more hair has come out. I have to repeat this until I no longer see any new hair coming out in the comb because there may not be any hair on my head that's not attached to my scalp. Yeah, that was a long one. Fact, you have to get knots out. That's all you have to do with your hair. You comb once or maximum twice all around while your hair is wet to get the knots out, and that's it. It's actually not possible that all of the hair on your head is attached to your scalp. And at any given time, there's always hair floating around on your head. So combing over and over again to remove all loose hairs is really an exercise in futility. Practical tip, you may want to comb your hair while you're in the shower. Some women find that the shower water makes it easier to get knots out. If you comb your hair after your shower, first put on your robe so that when you comb your hair, the hair you're combing out will go onto the robe and not onto your skin on your back. Combing your hair should take no more than 3 minutes or maybe a minute longer if you have especially long hair. I'm going to repeat that. Combing your hair should take no more than 3 minutes or maybe 4 minutes if you have especially long hair. If you're combing your hair for longer, you're overdoing it. Although we generally don't use conditioner on the day we go to the mikvah, if you have super knotty hair, use a bit of conditioner and then make sure to rinse it out well, because it does leave a residue and is generally considered a chatzitza. Other hair on your body should also be combed to get rid of knots. Okay, number 9, shaving of body hair, legs, and underarms. Misconception: I must always shave before going to the mikvah. Fact: you only have to shave if you do so with any kind of regularity, which goes back to the concept of being makpid, being particular. So if you yourself consider body hair something that doesn't belong there and you always remove it, you would have to shave. Suggestion: shave a day or two before so you don't get all those little tiny annoying hairs that stick to your legs. If you can't shave a day or two before, you may shave on the day you're going to the mikvah, but wash off those small hairs. Note: Sephardim seem to be stricter about shaving, so if you're Sephardi, please go according to your tradition in this area. Number 10, belly button. Misconception: I have to dig deep into my belly button with a Q-tip to scrub it well. Fact: clean it like you normally do when showering, making sure there's no visible chatzitza. Number 11, your nose. Misconception: I must keep blowing my nose until I'm sure there's no moisture at all in there, and or I have to put a Q-tip up my nostrils to clean my nostrils out. Fact: you blow your nose once to get the mucus out. No Q-tips and no need to stick a tissue inside your nose either. Number 12, genital area. Misconception: I have to wash deep inside my genital area. Fact: you only have to wash the vaginal and anal openings. Number 13, dry peeling skin. Misconception: I have to remove every piece of dry or peeling skin. Fact: you're not required to remove those. This goes under the category of what we call ein ladavar sof. There's no end to the matter. Only large pieces of hanging skin need to be removed, like the kind you would remove if you have this large piece of hanging skin and you're saying, this is ugly, I got to remove it. This also applies to peeling skin on your lips in the winter. Many of you may have lots of dry lips and lots of peeling skin, and you'll never finish getting it off. Practical tip: if you have dry skin and you know you're going to have a hard time ignoring those pieces of skin, use hand cream often during the week preceding your mikvah visit so that by the time that you get to the mikvah, your hands are not dry. Number 14, using the bathroom. Misconception: I must urinate to empty my bladder before tevila, whether or not I feel the need to. Fact: you only need to use the bathroom if you have the sensation that you need to urinate. Number 15, rinsing / showering, referring to the shower you take right before tevila. Misconception: I have to take a long shower and wash myself all over again with soap and shampoo, even if I use soap and shampoo in my bath. Fact: this is just a rinse off. No shampoo and soap again, even if you bathe at home. This shower should take 5 minutes or less, and you should comb your hair after the shower or in the shower like we said. And the final one, number 16, checking yourself, what we call iyun in Hebrew. Misconception: I must keep checking in the mirror really hard over and over again in order to find chatzitzos. Fact: you're looking for anything that's an obviously visible chatzitza. If you find something, remove it. Obviously, you've already removed jewelry, glasses, contact lenses, dentures, hearing aids, rings, and the Nuva ring, a method of birth control, basically anything you weren't born with. In front of the full-length mirror, lift each of your arms and glance, briefly check your hands, the bottoms of your feet, and the rest of your body. You will definitely notice if you have a visible chatitza when you look at yourself in the mirror. It's almost impossible not to. Check your back in the mirror as well as one can look at their back. Quickly feel your back for chatitzas with your hands. Note, by the way, about this step of checking yourself, which we call iyun. This step of checking yourself is a necessary doraisa halachic component and cannot be omitted. It's actually the only doraisa part of chafifa. Now, it's not the attendant's responsibility to check you. It's actually your own responsibility to check yourself. At some mikvaos, the attendants check you automatically without asking, depending on your mikvah and your city. And at some mikvaos, the attendants give you the choice and ask if there's anything you would like for them to check. So if it makes you very uncomfortable to go to the mikvah because the attendant is automatically going to check you without asking, you could say, thank you very much. I checked myself properly on my own. Now, I want to be clear. There's nothing wrong if you do want the attendant to check you. That's totally fine. And attendants are ready, willing, and able to help you with that. I would say that the majority of women want the attendant to at least check their backs because most of us don't have eyes on our backs. Bottom line, this step is a necessary quick glancing over and should take 1 to 2 minutes maximum. Okay, we finished with the 16 most common misconceptions that I'm aware of. Other things that women generally don't have misconceptions about, but I'm mentioning these so now we've included everything that is part of the chafifa process. Your ears, if you use a Q-tip, just be careful. Don't go too deep inside. Earring holes, if you have pierced ears, sometimes you can develop like some crust on the back of your ear. So just remove the crust with your fingers or stick an earring post into your hole and the crust is going to come out on the other side. And your teeth, brush your teeth once and floss once. And a practical tip about floss, don't use a cheap brand of floss because it can tear and stay in your teeth, and that's not fun. So we basically went through the whole chafifa process. Now, although this presentation is about chafifa, here are two common misconceptions related to actual tevila that I want to mention, the actual immersion. Touching the walls, like hitting the walls for a second or for a few seconds during tevila, this is not a problem. It doesn't matter because for a kosher tevila, all you need is that your entire body, including all of your hair, has to be immersed in the water all at once for just 1 second. So the attendant's only job is actually to make sure your entire body is immersed. She's not going to say kosher if your tevila has not been done properly. So if one of your tevilos is not done properly, she'll certainly ask you to redo that one. So knowing this should help alleviate the fear that your tevila was potentially not kosher. So again, you're going down, you're touching the wall for a second, but it doesn't matter because you've been immersed already for 1 split second. Your entire body has been immersed. The second misconception about actual tevila is you're not required to check your hands between each tevila to make sure nothing is on them. You checked your hands in the iyun step, in the checking step, and there's no reason to think that you got dirt on your hands between one tevila and the next. Okay, now post-tevila. Again, these are not chafifa misconceptions, but 4 items that are often part of mikvah stress for women. So please resist the urge to check yourself when you get back to your preparation room. You know you did everything properly, and just trust yourself. If you find a chatzitza after tevila or you forgot to do one of the preparations, don't assume you have to tevil again. If you're still at the mikvah, ask the attendant what to do. She may know if you need to tevil again. If she doesn't know, she'll suggest that you call your rav or she'll offer to call a rav on your behalf if you don't want to call yourself. If a rav tells you that b'di'eved, you don't have to tevil again, don't worry, it's 100% okay. B'di'eved does not mean, well, it's really not okay halachically, but we're just going to say okay for this time. B'di'eved does not mean you're a loser. B'di'eved means it's not the ideal way we would do it, but after the fact, it's still halachically acceptable. Also, if you're told to tevil again, you'll probably be told that you should not say another bracha. If you discover something after you've already gone home, call your rav and ask what to do or have your husband call for you. Be aware, by the way, that having to tovel again is not something that should happen on any kind of regular basis, like maybe once or twice in your life. So I just want to say some practical tips to make your preparation easier and less stressful. You may start some of your prep during the day if that makes it less stressful, like cutting your nails or removing makeup. This could be a good idea if you're short on time because you could do part earlier in the day and part closer to tefillah. However, if when you get to the mikvah, you're redoing everything you did earlier, you're defeating the purpose. If you're spending an hour earlier in the day and an hour at the mikvah, your total prep time is actually 2 hours, which is overkill. Every mikvah has a preparation checklist in each room. If you did everything on the checklist, you're good and you don't need to think about anything else. That's why the checklist is there. I'm also happy to share our mikvah's checklist, and you'll have the opportunity to request that as well in the post-event survey form. To give credit where credit is due, this checklist was adapted from the Lower Merion Community Mikvah's checklist. Try to reduce the stressors that are not necessarily related to the actual chafifa. We don't have time to go into those in detail, so I'm briefly mentioning some of the most common challenges and some solutions or suggestions. Challenge: preparing with your kids around. Sure, it's stressful when you're bathing and your kids are banging on the bathroom door or you hear them crying or fighting. Easy solution for that: fully prepare at the mikvah. Then nobody's hanging around your room and you don't have to know what's going on. Challenge: getting out of the house at night. Suggestion: work on this before you have to go to the mikvah. Every woman should be able to get out of the house at least once a month for an hour, and even more than an hour, but that's a different story. I repeat, every woman should be able to get out of the house at least once a month, and not only because you have to go to the mikvah. It's for your self-care and your mental well-being. Challenge: you hate taking a bath. This is common. I know that. If the reason you don't like taking a bath is because you feel like you're sitting in your own dirt, I hear that. Here's a suggestion. Start your chafifa by taking a super quick 1 or 2 minute shower and then do your bath. That will help maybe. This is not a halacha, nor a halachic suggestion, nor a minhag. It's just a practical tip. Challenge: you're scared of water. Solution: get help from an aqua therapist, even if it's been many years that you've been dealing with this. Challenge: you have no time to prepare. Solution: arrange your day in a smart way. Don't do extra things that don't have to be done that day. Schedule them for a different day. For dinner, serve mac and cheese, order pizza, etc. This is not a day to make a fancy dinner. Challenge: you're exhausted. And while you and your husband have a good and loving marriage, there's a lot of pressure, real or imagined, to be intimate when you come home that night. This is also very common. Suggestion: this requires open and honest communication between you and your husband so that practical solutions can be found that work for both of you. This is, of course, beyond the scope of this talk. Challenge: you're having a challenging time in your marriage or you have general issues with intimacy. You don't stress about the actual chafifa, but of course, you're stressed about mikvah in general. Again, that's a discussion for a different time, but the suggestion is to please get help. Challenge: you're dealing with infertility or pregnancy loss or other difficult life circumstances. Of course, you're stressed. Suggestion: get all the support you can. Challenge: you're uncomfortable with the attendant seeing you undressed, and this adds to your stress. This is very common. Hopefully, you know that although the attendant has to supervise and make sure that your entire body, including your hair, is fully immersed, she is looking at you minimally and makes every effort to maintain your privacy to the best of her ability. She can hold up your towel or robe in front of her in a way that she can see just the top of your head going into the water. She's also not thinking about your body. All she's thinking is that she wants to facilitate your kosher tefillah and get you back to your prep room ASAP. It may also help you to think that she also needs an attendant to supervise her tefillah when she herself uses the mikvah. Challenge: you have a lot of self-imposed pressure to feel spiritual and or to love going to the mikvah. However, you may not love going to the mikvah and the experience is just not spiritual for you. This is quite common, so don't beat yourself up about it. The fact is that you're doing a mitzvah just by immersing in a mikvah. I love what Rebbetzin Rivka Slonim always says about what you may feel when you're in the mikvah. She says, how will you feel? You'll probably just feel wet. So now, of course, I'm not saying that there aren't women who love going to the mikvah or there aren't women who feel that the experience is spiritual. If you feel the way that way, that's fabulous. That's amazing. It would be nice if everyone felt that way. But the reality is that's not necessarily the case. So we're done with the other stressors. I do want to mention a fabulous book by Rabbi David Aryeh Kaufman. It's called the Taharas HaMishpacha Workbook, a program for overcoming mikvah-related anxiety. It's helpful even if someone doesn't have clinical anxiety or clinical OCD, and it has a great prep timetable that adds up to an hour or less, where he goes through every step of the preparation, and he suggests how many minutes it should take, down to the half a minute sometimes. Lori is going to post a link to the book on Amazon. She's going to post it in the chat. So to summarize, mikvah preparation does not have to be stressful or complicated. It can be calm and stress-free, even enjoyable and joyful. How you experience it is, for the most part, very much up to you. Even if you've been stressed about this for many years, it doesn't have to be your truth forever. You can change it. And keep in mind that mikvah preparation is just one step in the entire tahara process. So hopefully I've clarified some misunderstandings. And the next time you go to the mikvah, you can take some of these lessons with you.
There you go. Thank you, Kai. That was incredibly helpful. Before we turn to questions from the audience, we'll be putting a link in the chat in case you would like to support this event or future events like it. The link will take you to the Mikvah Emunah Society website where you can make a contribution to the Robin Nyman Mikvah Education Fund. I'm also putting a link in the chat with the survey. We would like to get your reactions to this program. We will also be emailing it out after the event. We ask that you fill out the survey so we can continue to make our events responsive to your needs and for a chance to win a $25 Amazon gift card. So you should be seeing that on the chat. Okay, so I've put together all the questions, and if you haven't put your taken the opportunity to put in your questions, again, please send it to where it says Mikvah Q&A, send questions here. And actually, I did receive quite a few, so we're going to get started. Okay. I've always been confused about the pre-tevila shower. If I showered at home after my bath and right before coming to the mikvah, is it halakhically necessary to shower again at the mikvah? I've also heard that you can just do an extra dunk instead of the shower. Then during the height of COVID, I thought about this question even more because none of us were showering at the mikvah and it seemed acceptable to just come and dunk.
Okay, that's a great question. So it's actually a custom to shower again briefly at the mikvah with warm water prior to tevilah and not a halacha. So I'm aware that some women will do a pre-dunk instead of the shower. I actually have not been able to find a source for that, despite having looked for it. And actually today I was chatting with some veteran kala teachers and nobody seems to know a source for that. The only thing is that if a woman's hair is not very wet, her first immersion, her first dunk can be invalid, as maybe her hair hasn't gone all the way down under the water. Because once your hair is wet, the water in it weighs it down, and then usually the hair goes fully under the water for the next tevila. But even if that's the case, then your first tevila, if it wasn't okay, the attendant will tell you that wasn't okay, please redo it.
Okay, thank you. Okay, is it necessary to remove every bit of mascara residue?
So if you can't get your mascara off and it's really not coming off, again, it goes into the category of if you're a mock bit. So if it really doesn't bother you and you try to get it off, no, you don't have to. The other thing I want to mention about mascara is sometimes women are like, I'm not sure if I got it all off, and they keep rubbing and rubbing their eyes. So this is should be obvious, but you take a cotton ball and then you look at it. And if there's black on it, that means on the cotton ball, that means there's still mascara and black on your eye. And once it comes out clear, that means it's gone and you don't have to keep wiping your eye all the time.
Okay, thank you. It sounds like the bath is just for soaking. I've always thought I should be washing myself in the tub with soap and then using the shower just to make sure that I didn't get any dirt or anything on myself in between bathing and showering, because I always bathe at home. Is that incorrect?
Yeah. So the bath is really primarily for soaking. Most people just like to soak themselves in the bath sort of to not waste time. But the bottom line is that you just have to wash your body with soap and warm water. So you could do it in the bath or in the shower. It doesn't really make a difference what you do.
Okay. Okay. So we actually have two questions that I sort of combined about nails. And then we have another question later about nails too. Okay. If nails are already very short, do you need to do anything more to it? And a similar question, I bite my nails. So as a result, they never have a clean, fresh, smooth, and filed look. It's jagged with very questionable hangnails, bits of skin, and it I don't like it. And I really can't fix it. What do I do?
Okay, so if your nails are already short, many posts can say that you just have to take a nail file and literally make a new surface on your nails. That should go really fast. Here's a nail file, whatever. It's a big nail file. It's my phone. And you just go pass it over the edge of your nail. And there you've made a new surface, which is equivalent to cutting your nails. Now, in terms of biting your nails, if they never have a clean, fresh, smooth, filed look, and it's jagged, what does that mean? That means that you're not makbid. That's not a hakpada for you. You're not particular about that. So it's fine. Bits of skin, nails, cuticles. It sounds like whoever's asking this question is being a little too particular about their nails, because you're saying it looks yucky and bothers you, but there's no end in sight. So does it bother you on a regular basis? Like every morning when you leave your house, do you say, oh my gosh, I can't leave my house because my nails are ugly? So that's the best I can do to answer that question. But it sounds like you're being too particular about it in terms of mikvah preparation.
Okay. If you wash and comb your hair at home, do you need to wash and comb your hair again at the mikvah?
Okay. So if you're taking a shower at the mikvah, yes, you should comb your hair again, because often your hair will get knots in it as a result of taking a shower. If you're not showering again at the mikvah, yes, you should comb your hair to make sure that there are no knots in it. Think about this. It's a preparation that you did that can get undone. Like I would say that's the one thing that can get undone. You know, sometimes you brush your hair, you take out all the knots, and like 10 minutes later, you have knots in it. So combing your hair is what you should do as close as possible to actually immersing in the water.
Okay. Regarding the 1 hour for preparation, must you prepare for 1 hour if you start in the evening? What if you've completed your preparation in less time, your hair is short, for example?
Okay. So I'm hesitant to answer this question because this has been a question that's been told that you should ask your Rav. What I'll say is ask your Rav about this. You don't have to ask every single time. And just ask your Rav a one-time question. And if your Rav says you don't have to do the 1 hour, then just go with that.
Okay. What if you find hair on your hands in between dips? And a similar question, particularly with postpartum hair loss, hair coming off on your body during mikvah dunk, what are you supposed to do?
Okay, so I want to tell you about an experiment, and I probably should have included this in my misconceptions list. So I actually tried this once when I was at the mikvah. So your hair, if you put a piece of hair on your arm, when you go down into the mikvah, the hair will lift itself off of your skin. Okay. So between your two or three tevilos, how many you do, the hair is not going to remain on your body. So it's not a chatiza and it's not a problem.
Okay. I have curly and knotted hair, and I tend to get, and it tends to get caught up by trying to brush my hair and remove all the knots. Any suggestions or clarifications? Do I have to get away all the knots?
Yeah, you have to get the knots, but what you should do in that case is use conditioner, because conditioner will help you get your knots out. We have always been told not to use conditioner, but if you have thick, knotty, curly hair, and you need conditioner to help you get the knots out, then you can do that. And just make sure to rinse the conditioner out. That should take care of the problem for you.
Okay. Thank you. It's easy to get out on a weekday, but it's very stressful and awful to lie to your children and your family on a Friday night or a Chag night. How do you handle that?
Okay. So lying to your children, I don't think people need to feel awful about that. You're going to do a mitzvah and it's okay. You could tell your children that something that's not true. That's not a problem. It is stressful to get out on Friday night. How do you handle that? You just do the best you can. You figure out a plan in advance. You have 7 days to figure it out. You say you're going to visit a friend. You say somebody needs help. You're going to do a mitzvah. Something like that. I don't want to get into the Friday night tevila question here because it's not so related to chafifa, but I know it's stressful and it's doable. You just got to get creative and figure it out with your husband.
Okay. Okay. Here's another nail question. Can you toivo with nail polish?
Okay. This is a very, very, common question that we hear these days. So the answer to that is there are different opinions from rabbis and there are different mikvaos that have different policies. I really don't want to get into that topic right now because it's there are too many different opinions about this. So I'm going to just say that it depends on your rabbi and it also depends on your mikvah. So while your rabbi may say, yes, you can go to the mikvah with nail polish, the mikvah that you're going to may not allow it. The one thing I will say is the only way a rabbi would say it's okay is if the nail polish is not chipped and it's been freshly applied. So that could be considered like it's not a chatitza because it's really well done. And that's really the most I can say about nail polish right now.
Okay, thank you. I know you're supposed to prep for a Saturday night or Motzi Chag appointment on Erev Shabbos or Chag, but I simply can't and I just don't. Is it truly required to prep then? It's simply just very stressful. I do all the prep after Chag or after Shabbos, which is less stressful. Is that wrong?
That's totally fine. I find this fascinating, actually, because you would think that it would be preferable to start your prep from scratch after Shabbos or after Yom Tov is over, right? You have less of a chance of something getting undone. But Halacha tells us that we should do it before Shabbos or before Yom Tov, because after Yom Tov or after Shabbos, you may rush your preparations because it's already nighttime. It's already dark and you know that it's already the time for tefillah and you may not do it properly. But it is completely, completely fine to start from scratch, Motzei Shabbos, Motzei Yom Tov. It's not a problem. You don't even have to think about it for 1 minute. If you can't do it Erev Shabbos or Erev Yom Tov, it's 100% okay to do it afterwards.
Okay. I'm not sure if the last time I was the mikvah that a proper check was done after a shower and combing my hair. Was my tevila invalid?
So that's a question for a Rav, actually, because if you remember, we were speaking about the Iyun step, the checking step, and that's one step that could potentially invalidate a tefillah. It's a question you have to ask a Rav. A Rav will typically try to ask you questions and say, maybe you looked in the mirror, like he'll ask you more questions about that. And maybe indeed it was okay. That's not something that I can answer.
Okay. Okay. So here are two questions that are similar about the mikveh attendant. I'm not a fan of the idea of a mikveh attendant, and I understand why, but I simply just don't like someone being there. One thing that was done during COVID was that we got in the water while the attendant was outside and then told her when we were in the water. I was told that we possibly could still do this post-COVID if we asked the attendant. And sort of as a related question, if there is an attendant in the room with you, is it okay to face the wall and not the mikveh attendant when I'm dipping?
Okay, thank you. I'm going to address part B. Is it okay to face the wall? You can face any direction you want. It makes no difference. The mikveh attendant has to be able to see you immersing. So from where she's standing, she can see from whatever direction you're facing. Most people, I'll say, face away from the mikveh attendant. I would say that's like 95% of the people. So it's totally up to you. In terms of the other question, so our rabbis have told us that we should go back to the mikveh attendant being in the room. They feel that lechatchila, ideally, that is the best way. So during COVID, we did a lot of things that were not lechatchila. We did them bedieved, like other areas of halacha. We had no choice. We had to make adjustments because of COVID. But now that COVID is over, we are going back to attendants being in the room. I do want to point something out. I understand that an attendant standing out of the room, outside of the room, feels like you have more privacy. But in reality, as a mikveh attendant, I'm there once a week. We can't, if anything, actually, when I'm standing further back, like by the door of the mikveh room, I have more space and I can see, potentially see your body more than if I'm standing up close and holding a towel right here and there's not so much space in between me and the woman who's titling.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, I'll go to this question next. Okay. If you need to use the bathroom after you completed your bath and shower, do you need to shower again?
So no, the answer is you do not need to shower again. Just wash your vaginal area just to make sure like that you don't have like toilet paper stuck on you or anything like that. So just like go to the sink, splash some water on yourself and you're all good.
Okay. When I'm toivling, if I do not hear the attendant say kosher three times, am I still kosher or tahor?
Yes. That's a complicated question. I don't know that that ever happens. And if you don't hear the attendant say kosher, then just ask her, was that kosher? I'm not sure. That's a question that I don't know the answer to. I'm assuming that the attendant would not take you back to your room if she didn't see you do your kosher tefillos. So yes, that's a kosher tefillah. I'm just going to guess halachically. But if you ever had that kind of situation, just say to the attendant, did you say kosher? And we have that often. Like sometimes women have water in their ears and we said kosher, but they didn't hear. So it's very common for somebody to say, was that kosher?
Okay. Okay, so there was actually two questions about the nails again. Okay, one is, I hate filing my nails. I just can't handle the way that it feels. Is there anything else I can do? And also, how many days in advance can you cut your nails? I thought I heard something about 3 days before. Would I still then have to make a new surface of nail with the nail file?
Okay, so in terms of hating to file your nails, you can cut them with a nail clipper. It doesn't have to be with a nail file. The reason I said nail file is because some people don't want to cut their nails. So you can use a nail file instead of a nail clipper. So if you don't like the nail file, then use a nail clipper. And how many days in advance can you cut your nails? There's a difference of opinion. Some people say it has to be done that day. Some people say the day before. Some people say up to 2 days in advance. And because there's a difference of opinion, I would suggest that you call your Rav and ask your Rav.
Okay. Do you have to comb your hair with an actual comb, or if you've combed your hair at home, or are fingers okay when you are at the mikvah?
Okay. So Shulchan Aruch actually talks about a comb. So yes, a comb is necessary. Fingers okay when at the mikvah is usually fine for Friday night when you can't use a comb. So you run your fingers through your hair. So if you just combed your hair at home on a weeknight and you want to run your fingers through your hair to make sure that there are no knots, that should be fine. But if you took a shower at the mikvah, then you do need to comb your hair again, because in all probability, you've developed new knots.
Okay. How thorough should one be with pen or marker, et cetera, that doesn't just wash off with regular rubbing with soap and water?
Okay, that's a great question, and something that I'm going to add on to my misconception list. So anything that doesn't have anything that doesn't have any mamashas. I need an English
permanent,
word.
Permanent?
No, I'll get there in a second. That you can't feel.
Eraser.
With a substance, right. Something with a substance, then that's okay. We try to get it off, but if it doesn't come off, it's just considered a stain. It's part of your skin and it's fine.
Okay. Okay, this is sort of a little bit different question. I know mikveh is a special time for tefillah. When are you supposed to daven? When you're in the water or afterwards?
The answer to that is whenever you want. It's totally up to you. And if you're going to daven in the water, just a suggestion as a mikveh attendant, just tell the attendant, can I have a minute or two so it's not awkward and she knows what you're doing, because otherwise she's not sure if you're standing in the mikvah and you're about to immerse again, because maybe you do more than the average amount of times. So just ask the attendant, can I daven? You can daven in your room. You can daven whenever you want. You can daven when you get home. You can daven all day. Totally up to you. There's no halachas about davening.
Okay. Can you just take a bath alone at home and then do your showering and combing your hair at the mikvah only instead of also at home?
Say that again.
So taking the bath at home and then doing your shower when you get to the mikvah.
Yeah, totally. That's totally fine. You could split it up however you want. I'm a fan of doing all your prep at the mikvah. If you know me, you know that. Because think about it, if you're doing your preparation at home, you're getting undressed at home, you're doing some preparation, a bath at home, you're getting dressed, you're getting back to the mikvah, getting undressed again. That's a lot of getting dressed and undressed. So if you do it all in one place, it's just much easier and less steps.
Okay. Are you allowed to talk in between the dips? Like, can I ask a question to the attendant about your dip in between, or are you not supposed to talk until you're finished?
Okay. So you're supposed to try not to talk. If you do talk, don't worry about it. The dip and the bracha that you should try not to speak between is the first dip, the bracha, and then the second dip, because that's sort of like all one sequence. It would be the same concept of washing your hands for hamotzi and not talking until you eat challah or bread. But if you did talk, don't worry about it. That does not invalidate your tevila in any way.
Okay. Can I eat foods that get stuck in my teeth, like meat or popcorn, the day of the mikvah, and then just brush and floss my teeth very well?
Yeah, you may eat foods that get stuck in between your teeth. I would suggest avoiding those just so that you shouldn't have to stress about getting it all out with floss. But there's no halacha saying that you're not allowed to. It's just a practical suggestion not to. I just want to say something. I see people are chatting me. If you've chatted me directly with a question, I'm not looking at the chat. So send it to Mikva Q&A, send cues here, because I can't listen to Lori asking me questions and read the chat at the same time.
Okay. I know that we're going to post the link to the book, but if you could just tell us the name of the book again. We had two people asking for the book that you recommended.
Sure. I'm going to put it in the chat right now. Yeah, I'm going to put it in the chat.
Okay.
Right. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, I was waiting for you to do that.
Oh, okay, fine. Done.
Maybe. Okay, there we go. So there's the name of the book and the link to get it on Amazon. Okay, the next question. If you squeeze your eyes or your mouth really shut tight while toiveling, does that invalidate the tevila?
No, it doesn't invalidate the tefillah as far as I know, but you should just loosely close them. Your eyes and your mouth are, in halachic terminology, are called beis hastarim, a closed place. So we wash them, we make them ra'u l'tefillah, so that if they were open, they would be affected by the tefillah, so to speak. But it's okay if your mouth and your eyes are shut tight. Nevertheless, you shouldn't be shutting them tight.
Okay. Okay. So, Kai, you just said that it was okay to eat meat on mikveh day, but you might avoid it. Isn't it a minhag to not eat meat or to not need challah dough?
Oh, my bad. I think that when somebody was saying food that could get stuck in your teeth, was meat part of the question? Yeah. So if meat was part of the question, sorry about that, I missed that. Then yeah, we should not, it's a custom not to eat meat on mikveh day. So you should avoid eating meat on the day that you're going to the mikveh. If you ate meat on the day that you're going to the mikveh, it's okay. You could still go to the mikveh that day. As a matter of fact, on days that it's a mitzvah to eat meat, like Purim and Chol HaMoed on Yontif, we don't not go to the mikveh just because we ate meat that day. So again, don't eat meat that day. But if you did, then you can still tevil. But yes, we're not supposed to. Thank you for asking that again, because I missed the meat part.
Okay.
And the kneading challah dough again is more of a practical suggestion. It's not usher to knead dough, but as you know, when you're kneading dough, like in your fingers, dough can get stuck, but you could just take a nail brush and brush it off and it's not going to be a problem.
Okay. A long time ago, I was told to use unwaxed or unflavored floss before mikveh because the wax could leave a coating on your teeth. Is that true?
So I've heard different things about this. I'm actually not sure. Thanks for asking that question. I'm going to try to ask my postdoc about that question. It sounds to me like it's probably not a big deal at all, but at mikvos, generally, the floss is unwaxed. Unflavored, I'm not sure what unflavored has anything to do with it, but unwaxed, most mikvos just have regular unwaxed floss. So if you used waxed floss, I highly doubt that that would be a problem, especially if you brush your teeth quickly right after that.
Okay. I get very stressed in the water. What is the correct stance when immersing?
Okay,
stand. Like, how to stand.
How to stand? Okay, so you just stand straight. We're told to like sort of lean forward so that the water gets to all the parts of your body, like under your breasts, but you don't really have to stress about that. When you're in the water, like your body is not going to be perfectly straight. Your body is going to sort of lean forward on its own. So just don't worry about that and just stand however you stand. Some Chabad people, have a minhag of spreading out like a fish. So they sort of do a belly flop. That's Chabad minhag only. But for everybody else, just relax. Your body is relaxed and not tight and not just straight, but not something to be stressed about. Don't worry about it.
Okay. I think those are our questions. Thank you, Chai. Hopefully we have clarified some misunderstandings here. And the next time that you go to the mikveh, you'll take some of these lessons with you. If you had a more personal question or one that was not answered, there is a place on the survey to put your contact information and Chai will be in touch with you directly. We are working on the next event of the Robin Nyman Mikveh Education Fund. Stay tuned for more information on the next event and Chai's refresher courses. Please fill out the survey if you have not already, and you'll have a chance to win a $25 Amazon gift card. We would love to hear your feedback on tonight's event and suggestions for future programming. Thank you all for coming, and good night.